Almost feels a little strange sitting in front of this microphone or behind this microphone, depending on your perspective. It's been some weeks since I've been here live. I am back from vacation. And we here at Issues Etc. are coming to you live this, the 13th. Is it the 13th day of January already? How time flies when you're doing nothing and just taking it easy. And when you're working, it seems like the days just drag on. Well, January is halfway over. First live show in January of Issues Etc. And it's a busy one indeed. It's very good to be back. I missed this. I missed this opportunity. And I missed you, our listeners, as well. I miss the guys who are sitting here in the studio with me a little bit, but now that I've been with them for 4 or 5 minutes, that's all gone. Believe me, no tears were shed. And my producer, in usual form, called me a couple times on vacation, just to chit-chat, things like that. That really irritates my wife, by the way. She said, next time we find out when you go on vacation, I get to call you anytime I want. You can join us. I don't mind you calling us during these hours of Issues, etc. Our phone numbers, as always, are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our guest in the first part of this program, Susan Klein, legislative liaison for Missouri Right to Life. We're going to talk very briefly with her about the Missouri House proposal that would require a one day waiting period before having an abortion. A little later, we'll be talking with Bill Beckman, executive director of Illinois Right to Life, about the Choose Life license plates. I'd like to know what you think about Choose Life license plates in Illinois, whether you would get one if you had the opportunity. We'll save that question for Open Lines, which follows from 3:30 to 4:30. Also, a little sound from Governor, well, now former Governor, George Ryan from Illinois. He made national news, and if you read the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, perhaps laid the foundation for a mistrial in his own trial before the courts by pardoning 4 death row inmates and commuting over 160 other sentences in one fell swoop before he left office. Almost everyone says this is a bad idea. Almost everyone, except for George Ryan. We'll hear from George Ryan and from a father and a brother of one of the victims' families. During Open Lines, we'll get your reaction to that as well. I've got some other things to share with you during that hour of Open Lines. Gretchen Pasentino joins us for a half hour. Between 4:30 and 5, we'll talk about the Raelians, a UFO cult that believes that life on Earth began as the result of aliens cloning themselves. And now they claim to have cloned the first human baby. No, actually, the first 2 human babies. They have yet to show any objective proof for their claim. We'll find out what Gretchen Pasentino knows about the Raelians and their claim from 4:30 to 5. The final hour of the program, we are back to a 6 o'clock sign-off. Pastor Eric Rotman joins us, The 10 Commandments. He's co-author of this new book, which is our Issues Etc. Book of the Month, called To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity. We'll begin with the 10 Commandments in the last hour of Issues Etc. Our phone numbers again, 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Susan Klein is legislative liaison for Missouri Right to Life. Susan, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. I'm glad to be here.
What is the proposal before the legislature in the state of Missouri regarding this waiting period?
The woman's right to know, which is also known as informed consent, is basically legislation that requires the doctor to confer with the patient, the woman, about the effects of the abortion procedure that she's about to undergo and how it will affect her and her medical history. Basically, what we're doing is making sure that the doctor actually sits down with the woman. The way the current law reads, it's possible that a counselor could do the consultation or a physician's assistant. We want the doctor who has actually been to medical school. And the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists actually also says that it's the doctor's responsibility to inform the woman, the patient, of the medical procedure that she's about to undergo. So basically this legislation just is making sure that we close that loophole, make sure that the doctor is required to sit down with the woman and tell her what's about to happen to her.
So let me get this straight before you go on there. The law that is on the books now does require the abortion doctor himself to provide or one of his agents to provide full information about the procedure and the possible consequences and the possible complications and things like that, what the procedure will be. This proposal before the Missouri legislature would further require that and add one day for the woman to consider the information she's heard?
Yes.
Okay.
Basically, right now it says that the doctor has to provide the information. Now, that information could be provided through a counselor or through a physician assistant. So we are basically making sure that the legislation specifically says that the doctor must sit down with the woman, not a counselor, not a physician assistant. The doctor must sit down, and then he must do that 24 hours before the abortion is performed. Now, there are several other things, medical procedures that, you know, the Missouri legislature has looked at in past years as far as, we're not telling the doctor what he has to tell the woman. We are actually just making sure that he is looking at her medical history and giving her all of the information about the risk that she's about to undergo. The Missouri legislature recently did that with obstetricians and gynecologists in telling them that they have to counsel all patients on the perinatal effects of smoking cigarettes. Also, the Missouri legislature in recent years has told doctors that they must require physicians to describe the advantages and disadvantages and risk associated with breast implantation, and that they must do that 5 days before breast implantation. So basically what we're looking for is if a woman's going to have an abortion, the doctor has to sit down with her, and she has to wait 24 hours before undergoing that procedure in order for her to think about the risk that she's about to undergo.
Now, why is this piece of legislation and this concept of a woman's right to know, a one-day consent, why is this a priority for Missouri Right to Life?
I think if you look at, we live in a more educated society. I mean, it's been 30 years since Roe v. Wade. We know a lot more information about what occurs to a woman as well as to the baby during an abortion. So we're wanting a woman to have all of the information before her, as any other patient would have in any procedure. So we're wanting her to have all of the information available to her so that she can make an informed consent about what is about to happen to her own body.
I read that there's also a provision in this bill that would require abortion practitioners to carry at least $1 million of medical malpractice insurance. Why is that?
We are wanting to make sure that the physician is aware that he needs to sit down with the woman and look at her medical history. I mean, there was a case in 1997 out of St. Louis that, we don't know what happened beforehand, but we know that the clinic was cited by the state in violation of their own standards, and they went ahead with an abortion, and a woman died. So we're wanting to make sure that all physicians are very much aware that they're accountable for what goes on whenever they're doing a procedure, an abortion, to a woman. So in order to do that, there needs to be some kind of information filed with the State Department of Health that they do have malpractice insurance, that they are going to be more conscientious of what they're doing to a woman during an abortion procedure. So it's just an accountability issue.
Critics of this proposal and others, I'm sure, among them Carolyn Sullivan, executive director for the state chapter of the National Abortion and Reproductive Rights Action League, NARAL, said that this legislation is, quote, insulting to women. How do you respond to that?
I think what's insulting to women is not wanting to give women all of the information about the risks of abortion, not wanting the doctor to have to tell them what's about to happen to their body. That's insulting. Women are educated. We can make decisions for ourselves. And the abortion industry actually has really stressed the woman's right to choose. Well, we need to be able to have all of the information before us in order to make informed decisions.
What are the prospects of this bill in both the Missouri House and Senate? How does it line up as far as votes are concerned?
I think the recent elections has been a tremendous success for pro-lifers. Now, we have pro-life is not a party issue. Pro-life is a life issue. So we have good support on both sides of the aisle. We are looking, I think we have good prospects for moving this legislation. This legislation has been out there for several years. So we're excited about the prospects of moving this legislation this year.
And are we talking about bipartisan support in the legislature and in the Senate in Missouri?
Yes, we are, in the House and the Senate.
How would you typify Missouri state government with regard? I'm an Illinois resident, and I'm extremely disappointed with Illinois state government on the issue of abortion and pro-life issues and things like that. The laws are non-existent or far more lax than Missouri. How would you typify Missouri government at this point with regard to the pro-life issues?
Missouri government represents, as we've seen in this last election, represents a large number of pro-life views. I mean, the legislators basically represent the constituents of Missouri who are very conservative in their values, the traditional family values, and the major part of that is being pro-life. And we've seen that grow over the last several years, and it continues to grow.
Would you say that Missouri, among the 50 states, is perhaps, at least in that sense, a leader in the pro-life movement?
Missouri is definitely a leader in the pro-life movement. We have seen that through our legislators and our legal officials that have moved up in politics. Missouri is definitely a leader in pro-life movement.
Before we let you go, how specifically, recap for us if you would, Susan, how specifically would this woman's right to know legislation benefit women in Missouri?
Right to know is basically giving women all of the information that we have out there with medical technology and all of the new information that the medical field has given to us in keeping our bodies healthy. So basically, if we're looking at a woman who's making critical decisions in her life, we need to make sure that she has all of the information before her and that she has time to think about this information and make an informed decision.
Susan Klein, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Susan Klein is legislative liaison for Missouri Right to Life. We've been talking about legislation in the Missouri House, and there's also a similar bill for the Senate as well here in that state that would require a waiting period before having an abortion, a one-day waiting period. If you'd like to visit Missouri Right to Life on the web, very easy to do. It's missourilife.org, missourilife.org, also by telephone, area code 573-635-5110, 573-635-5110. Have you been hearing about these Choose Life license plates that that people have been talking about? Well, in my state of Illinois, apparently we won't be having them. We're going to talk a little bit about that for the remainder of this half hour of Issues Etc. with Bill Beckman, Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life. Bill, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd.
Tell us about the plates themselves, what the purpose was, and what's become of the proposal for the Secretary of State to be able to issue them as official plates for our country.
Okay, well, Choose Life plates originated in Florida, and they've been actively sold in Florida for close to 2 years now and have generated what's approaching about $1.5 million in funds to be used to help promote and support adoption as a more viable choice for women in pregnancies that may be inconvenient.
So what was the General Assembly of Illinois, what was their problem with the Choose Life plates?
Well, unfortunately, the people who are supporting abortion often view this as an attack on their view of the world, and so they basically attempt to bring the abortion issue into this as opposed to focusing on adoption, and therefore they've made claims such as the fact that that this is government supporting religion, which has been thrown out of court now numerous times, or that that they don't have an equal opportunity to have some issue that they would have put on a plate, which has also been thrown out of court a number of times, but that at least puts a lot of pressure on in terms of slowing down the process. What we wanted to do to try to improve that was just to go out and get a substantial number of signatures to basically show that there's a huge demand for this in Illinois. And at this point in time, we've accumulated over 15,000 signatures over the last few months. So we want to get the bill resubmitted in the new legislative session. There was no action taken on the bill that was submitted towards the end of the last legislative session.
I'm intrigued by the distinction that's being made here, that the Choose Life plates are pro-adoption rather than speaking directly to the issue of abortion. Make that case for us, because that does seem to be the sticking point or the difficult piece of information that few people are getting.
Well, the Choose Life, you know, message is obviously something which, you know, is in and of itself a very powerful message. I mean, you know, both from a standpoint of a, you know, it is in the Bible. I mean, it's just in and of itself, whether it was in the Bible or not. I mean, it's a powerful message. I mean, people obviously recognize that choosing life sounds like a positive choice, and that's why, from a standpoint of the people who view this as a viable option to generate funds for adoption, that effectively this is a message that would, you know, people would have a recognition and a meaning to buy a plate that had this kind of a message.
Do you think the fact that we've got six states, perhaps Illinois may join them in time, that are opting for these Choose Life plates means that President George W. Bush's vision for a culture of life, as he has called it, is catching on to a certain degree among the states?
Well, I think that there are a number of signs that, you know, that the value of life is being recognized, and the fact that, you know, abortion as a simple solution to a problem is not being viewed as readily as being that kind of a simple solution. And that, you know, especially given the fact that there's a huge number of people in this country who have been affected one way or another by adoption, either that, you know, their family has actually considered adopting children, has adopted children, or that they are an adopted person, or that they at least have within their extended family an adopted person, that, you know, that people can relate to that. I mean, they don't see that as being a negative. They see that as being a positive. So that's a very powerful statement for life, that's, I think, a significant twist compared to a few years back when we had all these negative stories about adoption and all the horror stories about judges making decisions and who should get the child and all these kind of things, and it kind of left people with a bad taste. And I think we're beyond that now, and hopefully this campaign to support adoption through Choose Life Plates will have a significant impact to help move us further away from that.
Now, according to the legislation, how exactly would proceeds from the sale of these specialized plates, how would they be used?
They would go into a fund that would be managed by the Secretary of State's office, but they would basically, according to the provisions of the bill, they would be used for adoption agencies, pregnancy help centers, and other organizations that basically help women evaluate their decision to put up a child for adoption, or to actually, you know, if they've made that decision, that they need help with maybe medical expenses or other things, you know, while they're going through their pregnancy, that this would be a source of funds to help provide for that. No organization that in any way referred for or did abortions would be entitled to get any of these funds per the provisions of the bill.
Do you think that's what really irritates pro-choice legislators in Illinois and pro-choice activists in Illinois about these plates, is that none of the money would go toward abortion providers or their agencies?
Well, obviously, they would definitely like to get that. I mean, every single court case that they've brought, you know, that's part of the thing that they're dealing with, is what angle can they use to either kill the program, or else, if they can't do that, to try to get a piece of the money by saying that the provisions are unacceptable the way they've been written. And again, I mean, so far, in terms of any of the cases that have been finally resolved, they've all fallen on deaf ears in terms of their making their arguments succeed. I mean, they've been totally unsuccessful. They've basically done a lot of delaying tactics, but they've never actually had any wins when it got to the final bottom line.
40 other states are considering similar initiatives to the one that failed to be acted upon by the legislature in Illinois. Illinois' prospects in the next session, and what do you think about the 40 other states as well? Is this something that's catching on?
I think it's something catching on. I think there's a certainly the within the states, you know, there's a lot of difference in terms of where things are at, and so I would say that over the next year, there's probably, you know, maybe a handful of states that will actually, you know, get through the process, and the other ones will be continuing to work on it. Within Illinois, I think the real question is, can we manage to find a what we're working towards is a broad base of legislators that recognize that this is truly an adoption issue, and that effectively that it's something that under that view is something that would be very politically unpopular to vote against. We believe that that case can be made. Now the question is whether or not, with all the other issues that the new legislature under the leadership of the new governor might be looking at, it, so whether or not they can kind of like just brush this aside and conveniently ignore it. Because if it actually comes up to consideration, it's going to be very difficult to fight. But if they can manage to keep it from coming up for consideration, which would be probably the biggest threat, is to bottle it up in committee so that it can't be given valid consideration. That would be where we might have a difficulty.
With only 2 minutes before we have to go, your evaluation of outgoing Governor George Ryan's pro-life or life record and incoming Governor Blagojevich's prospects on the same issue?
Well, we felt that with Governor Ryan that there were certain things that he originally promised that he didn't really provide for once he was in office. So that effectively we were pretty dissatisfied in terms of, you know, what he was able to do from a pro-life standpoint. As far as Governor Blagojevich, I believe that there's some serious concerns because, you know, based on his record in the U.S. Congress, for example, one of the things that we've been struggling to get in Illinois and that most of the states surrounding us already have is a parental notification bill in case of an underage girl going to get an abortion. That it would seem that based on his past record that he would be strongly opposed to such a very reasonable piece of legislation. And there are other areas as well where it would appear that his positions would be, as I heard you're talking about in Missouri, where they want to have an informed consent type of provision, and he would, you know, clearly based on his past record in the U.S. Congress, be against such provisions to help make sure that women are informed of what the situation is before they make a final decision for abortion.
Bill Beckman, keep up the good work. Thank you very much for being our guest on Issues, Etc.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bill Beckman is Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life. We've been talking about those Choose Life license plates. Now, when we come back from the break, I'd like to hear from you on that very issue. If your state approved a Choose Life license plate, and it was offered, perhaps at a little extra cost, would you get it? Or would you not? Would it make any difference to you? We'll talk about that when we come back. It's open lines. Also, we'll hear from Governor George Ryan, his announcement at Northwestern University last week that he was commuting the sentences of all 167 inmates on death row and pardoning four. We'll hear from him, and we'll have your calls during open lines when we come back. Stay with us.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The Apostles' Creed is a confession of faith almost as old as the Christian Church itself. What does this ancient creed have to say to Christians today? And does the Church still need creeds? For answers to these questions, I recommend a new book called To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity. Here's how you order this great new resource. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and under the What's New section, you'll find a link to Concordia Publishing House. Or call 1-800-325-3040 and ask to receive the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity. 1-800-325-3040 during regular business hours. Or go to our website, issuesetc.org, click What's New, and there you'll find information on how to order to all eternity.
Now this Global Minute focuses prayer on people who are unreached with the gospel. The country they live in is linked with terror. It's Afghanistan. Don't think of it as one unified country. Instead, it's a collection of people groups who have their own heritage and culture and even language. There are 70 distinct people groups in Afghanistan. The 10 largest only have small portions of scriptures available in their language. A report from the Baptist Press states that more than 84% of people in Afghanistan have never heard the gospel. The largest people group, the Pashtuns, account for 48% of the country's population. Pashtuns have about 13 million people in their group. Pray that the Pashtuns and other people groups in Afghanistan will hear about Jesus Christ and see Him as their Savior, not just a God of the Western world. Pray as well for peace. Learn about spiritual needs and how to pray for the world's hotspots. Log on to missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Who can discern his errors? Forgive my hidden faults. Psalm 19, verse 12. That's my surrender verse. Don't try to justify yourself, Dale. Your self-image isn't totally accurate. Did this ever happen to you? Someone, perhaps your spouse, has listed your faults, real or imagined. You go off to lick your wounds and realize that the ultimate problem isn't what you did or didn't do. You are the problem. I suspect people feel that way in divorce. You are the problem and need to be gotten rid of. Or is that the way you viewed your ex? Contemporary culture is big on forgiveness, stressing its therapeutic benefits. But the Bible goes farther. Forgiveness is not just some convenient cleanup of a messy situation. It's the essential way, the crucial way, God claims us as His own. You, with your flaws and failings, some known, some not, are God's forgiven child. You are not divorced from this lover. Here's hoping you find my surrender verse helpful. Maybe I am the problem, but at least God loves me. And on Monday morning, that assurance of love is what we all need.
Are you thinking about getting married but troubled because your fiancé is not a Christian? Are you already married and troubled because your spouse is not a Christian? What does Paul have to say about it in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, where he says, "Do not be yoked together with unbelievers"? We'll ask Pastor John Lukomsky next time on The Bible Study. Heard weekday mornings at 10:05. Join us.
The Bible Study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
Capital system is haunted by the demon of error. Error in determining guilt, error in determining who among the guilty deserves to die. Because of all of these reasons, today I'm commuting the sentence of all death row inmates, 167 of them.
That was Illinois Governor George Ryan's announcement last week at Northwestern University that he was commuting the sentences of all 167 inmates on death row in Illinois. Now, certainly, you've heard of this. It was in the news all over the place. Still is. He does it as he prepares to leave office and the new governor comes in. It appears that no one thinks this is a good idea except for Governor Ryan. I'd like to get your reaction on Governor Ryan's decision. We have open lines for the next hour of Issues Etc. The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. He pardoned four, commuted. That would mean he took them from a death sentence to a life in prison without the possibility of parole sentence. And I want to know if you understand former Governor Ryan's thinking on this and if you agree or disagree with it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It is open lines for the next hour of Issues Etc. Now, I've got a few things that I think about this and a story from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch to share with you that may bear upon some of his reasoning, and maybe it doesn't. And I'd like to find out what you think about that in just a minute. But first, let's hear more from Governor Ryan on whether closure for families of victims is a legitimate reason to execute convicted murderers.
I was struck by the anger of the families of murder victims. To a family, they talked about closure. They pleaded with me to allow the state to kill an inmate in its name to provide the families with closure. But is that the purpose of capital punishment?
Again, Governor George Ryan, this comment here, I think, is, I don't want to tip my hand too much, but I think really probably most indicative of what Governor Ryan is thinking here. And I think what he's thinking is, he's thinking about the legitimacy of the capital system itself, not about its error proneness. He talked about a demon of error that infects the capital system, the death penalty system. But I think he's talking about its legitimacy, not simply the fact that it seems to be error prone, coming up with false conclusions, false convictions, false executions. Because he's asking what the purpose of having a death penalty is in the first place. And he doesn't seem to think much of closure. The phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. He mentioned the victims' families. They did react. Let's hear the reaction from the father of one of the victims. Here's Vern Fueling, who waited 15 years for his son's convicted killer to be executed. This is what he had to say.
We believe in God, and without him, I don't know how we can handle it. We'll just have to turn it back over to him because, you know what, when this is all over, God is going to deal with that governor, and he's going to deal with everybody, and he'll do it right.
And here is one of Mr. Fueling's surviving sons, Ed Fueling, whose brother was killed by one of the 167 inmates scheduled to be executed in Illinois, and then whose sentence was commuted by Governor Ryan.
When Jesus was on the cross, there was two men with him, and he turned to one and said, "Your sins are forgiven." He didn't take that person down off the cross. That guy suffered consequences for his sin. There's a difference between forgiveness and consequences.
Okay, we've heard from Governor Ryan, his thinking in part, his announcement. We've heard from at least, I would say those perhaps are representative reactions of victims' families in this case, especially those who are people of faith. I want to hear from you now. What do you think of Governor Ryan's decision to commute 167 death row inmates to life in prison? We're coming to you live this Monday. It's January the 13th. We are back live. First live issues, etc. for January. Give us a call in the next hour. It's open lines 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Governor Ryan had been making noise about this for a long time. I think few believed he would actually do it, that he would actually commute every sentence of every convicted capital crime in Illinois. But he did, and he did it, well, a few days before he left office. I said before that few seem to think this is a good idea. Even his successor, Governor Blagojevich, and that's a mouthful. We're going to have a hard time getting that one out. But everyone will be able, they'll just be saying it in their sleep pretty soon. Governor Blagojevich, it always takes a false try. He said this was a bad idea. You may have been reading in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, where I was reading as well. Death row commutations prompt bid for mistrial. Now, Governor Ryan's career as governor was not only taken up with talking about commuting death sentences and showing concern for whether or not justice is being done with our death penalty system, it was also taken up with his own time before the courts. He is facing racketeering charges. He and groups that support him are facing racketeering charges. That was big in the news about a year and a half ago. And here it is from the AP. Attorneys for former Governor George Ryan's longtime top aide asked for a mistrial in their racketeering case Monday, saying that Ryan's commutation of 167 death sentences tainted the pool of possible jurors. You remember there are a few aides that are being charged with racketeering under George Ryan's administration. Now their lawyers are saying, look, there's not a person, given my client's association with former Governor George Ryan, there's not a person that we could choose from a jury who is going to give us the benefit of the doubt. So unpopular is the decision of George Ryan to commute these sentences. Attorneys for Scott Falwell were joined in their request by lawyers for the Citizens for Ryan Campaign Committee. And that's because they simply can't bring these charges against Ryan himself, which is also on trial for racketeering. Falwell was chief of staff when Ryan was Illinois Secretary of State and served as Ryan's campaign manager in his gubernatorial runs, I believe. Prosecutors say Falwell and campaign committee used state employees and state money to do political work in elections going back a decade. The charges are an outgrowth of the federal government's four-year investigation of corruption when Ryan was Secretary of State before his 1998 election as governor. The request for a mistrial came as U.S. District Judge Rebecca R. Pallmeyer was trying to wrap up jury selection. The timing to me seems, I don't know, coincidental? Opening statements were expected to get underway on Tuesday. That apparently may not happen. Ryan on Friday pardoned four death row inmates and on Saturday commuted the sentences of all the others, 167 in all. Defense attorneys told Pallmeyer that action, which had been heavily criticized by a number of state prosecutors and others, would taint the jury pool. Federal prosecutors and jury selection process was working and the death penalty issue was unrelated to the trial, but apparently not in the minds of the defense attorneys anymore. Pallmeyer took the motion for a mistrial under advisement and said she would issue a ruling later. Meanwhile, the jury selection goes on. Things, stranger things have happened, haven't they? But this seems to be ready-made for, if you're going to look for a mistrial, how else would you taint the jury pool, virtually everyone in the state, by making a notorious decision as you leave office? What do you think about this decision? Regardless of whether... Well, okay, let's deal with it in two ways, okay? The system may be error-prone. Some people say 50% of those sitting on death row are falsely accused. And then if they are executed, they have no chance to prove their innocence somewhere in the future. We've talked about this before. Do you believe it's really as error-prone as Governor Ryan seems to assume? He's basing this on the fact that there have been a lot of convictions overturned. But even at that, if he's going to commute these sentences to life in prison, if half the people are innocent, why not work for some way to get trials for these people? Some of them won't seek appeals. Some of them don't have the opportunity or the wherewithal or the means. For some of them, the evidence has disappeared. And if we do believe there's a 50-50 chance that each and every one of these 167 may be actually innocent of the crimes for which they are committed and for which they have been sentenced to die, well, I think commutation to life in prison is not going far enough. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you support the death penalty, and what is your reaction as a death penalty supporter to this decision of Governor George Ryan? Do you think it's a contradiction, as is often asserted by anti-death penalty advocates and pro-choice advocates, that there is a contradiction, a moral and ethical contradiction, between being against abortion while at the same time being for the death penalty? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you base your opinion, your thoughts on the death penalty, on what? Your knowledge of the legal system and of justice in general, or do you base it on Holy Scripture? The two may not be mutually exclusive, by the way. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. A reminder, Gretchen Passantino will join us here in about 40 minutes. We'll be talking with her about this, well, it's a UFO cult called the Raelians. Rael is their leader. They have a spokesman. She's been on television quite a bit because it was a couple weeks ago that the Raelians announced, at long last, they had been building up to this for some months, they announced that they had actually succeeded in cloning a human baby. A woman apparently had allowed her genetic material to be used with one of her eggs, and her genetic exact duplicate had been produced. She'd given birth. Now they say there are two. A very prominent ABC journalist, or former ABC journalist, decided to take up the challenge and form a completely independent committee. He had the committee all together, and then the Raelians balked and said, well, we're not sure we want you to talk to the lady involved here. They said they're postponing their decision. We'll find out who the Raelians are, and we'll find out what they are up to, if anything, except a hoax, with Gretchen Pasentino in the next hour, and Eric Rotman joins us in the last part of the program to talk about the Ten Commandments. He's co-author of the book To All Eternity, Our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for January. This death penalty thing is a toughie. Not because it's difficult to be for or against. That's not the tough part of it. The tough part of it is that there is obviously a finality to this sentence that other types of sentences do not have. And I don't think anyone would want to say, look, if innocent people die, innocent people die under our capital system. And the price you pay for the justice in some cases is the fact that a few innocent people will fall through the cracks and will die under falsely accused on death row. I don't think anyone wants to say that. But if we sit around waiting for a perfect justice system with a perfect outcome every time, how could we sentence anyone to what anything? The phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'm wondering who the first live caller in 2003 for Issues Etc. will be. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We talked earlier about the Choose Life license plates that took a crack there in Illinois, never quite made it to the legislative floor. They're going to try again with the next session to get these license plates. At first glance, you'd think, oh, these are anti-abortion license plates. Well, not strictly speaking. They are pro-adoption license plates. 15,000 signatures have been gathered to date in support of these things. I'm a resident of Illinois. I'm not a native of Illinois. I'm very quick to point that out. I am a native of Texas, and if you know anything about Texans, if you're from Texas, that is always your home state. But I will say a transplanted Texan in Illinois. I didn't sign any petition. No one gave me an opportunity to. But I wonder, if the plates were available, would I get one? I wonder if the 15,000 who have signed the petition will get one too. These things, after all, are intended to generate revenue for the state to promote adoption. If it became available for you, here, there, anywhere, would you get a Choose Life license plate? Do you think it needs to be a little more hard-edged than that? And that is, rather than just saying this is a pro-adoption license plate, let's have a license plate that says, because we've got license plates for other things, that says we ought to choose life, and that means not choose abortion. Six states have them. 40 other states are considering similar legislation to allow their secretaries of state to issue these license plates. They are actual license plates. They will go on your car. They're legal. You won't get pulled over. They're specialty plates. You don't have to have them. Would you go to the trouble of getting one? Would you go to the added expense of getting one when it's time to renew? Or maybe even special order it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Judge Antonin Scalia was speaking recently at a religious event in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And according to the Associated Press, I find this in the Los Angeles Times, he complained that, and this was Sunday, in fact, he complained that the courts have gone overboard in keeping God out of government. Antonin Scalia is arguably the most conservative politically judge on the U.S. Supreme Court. He's also got quite a tenure there, too, and has shown himself capable and willing to stand against, either in dissent or to stand with issues like this again and again and again. We will call him unwavering. Scalia, speaking at a religious event, said the constitutional wall between church and state, which he seems to concede exists, and I think he's right. He says that the constitutional wall between church and state has been misrepresented by the Supreme Court and the lower courts. As an example, he pointed to a ruling in California, famous, of course, from this last year, that barred students from saying the Pledge of Allegiance with the phrase, "One Nation Under God." Actually, it only barred students from saying the two words, "Under God," not "One Nation Under God." That appeals court decision, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, I would point out, is on hold pending further consideration by the very same court, but the Supreme Court eventually could be asked to look at that and review the decision itself. Scalia said that rulings by his own court gave judges in the pledge case, quote, some plausible support to reach that conclusion. That is, that there's been a misapplication of the constitutional wall between church and state. However, the justice said that he believes that such decisions ought to be made legislatively and not by the courts. Now, there's something in there I want to comment on. And this is important. Social conservatives, Christians among them, are often the first to cry foul when judges legislate from the bench. Although our cries of foul are strangely mute when judges legislate from the bench in ways that we like them to do it. I've tried to observe these things closely. I'm not the best observer in the world, but I've tried to keep a track of these things. And I find some rather uncommon integrity in the words of Antonin Scalia, at least here. And that is, he says, really, this isn't for the Supreme Court to decide. This is for legislatures to decide these issues about what we ought to say in our pledge. This is not for the courts. They should not legislate from the bench. And he's being consistent. If we don't want the courts to legislate from the bench in ways we don't like it, then we ought to cry just as loud when they do it in ways we do like, saying, we like your decision, but you're not the one to make it. Do you agree? Or is all fair in love, war, and the judicial system? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Herman is calling from Illinois. Herman, welcome to Issues Etc. Thanks for being the first 2003 caller to open lines, Issues Etc.
Taking the call, and hope you had a good Christmas and New Year's vacation.
Certainly did.
Very good. I've started to perceive that the Raelian claim of cloning is similar to Benny Hinn's claim of healing. There's no proof. At least the people who cloned the Dolly the sheep had proof of it, but Benny Hinn has no proof of his healings, and the Raelians won't show any credible proof of what they've claimed. I think they're just making a play for publicity.
Herman, thank you very much for the call. Now, this is a play for publicity, no doubt, whether their claim is true or not. If you've succeeded in doing this thing, that is cloning, that no one has succeeded in doing, but everyone is trying to do successfully, and we're not talking about just cloning a baby to full term, we're talking about the actual process of somatic nuclear cell transfer. We're talking about taking the genetic material from one cell, a non-reproductive cell, putting it into the egg, the ovum, stimulating it to divide, and thereby bringing about a genetic copy of the person whose DNA was donated. Whether or not, let's make this very clear, here's the big piece of misinformation, whether or not that embryo that is thereby cloned goes to full term or not, it is still a human being. There's no doubt about that. Genetically, it's a human being. Now, here's the question. He mentions Dolly the sheep. Dolly the sheep has got problems because her genes were 6 years old when she was conceived. Because the donor sheep, her mother, if you will, was 6 years old when her genetic material was used to clone her. That means, because age is a factor of genes and not necessarily of chronology or from the time you were born or conceived, her genes were already 6 years old. That makes her, I don't know, what is she, 4 or 5? She's 11. She has, this is true, we talked about it, she's got all the problems that an 11-year-old sheep would have. I don't know, hip dysplasia or something like that, arthritis in her back, bursitis, who knows what sheep, weak eyes, poor hearing, I don't know. But they say She has the physiology and the frame of a sheep twice her age. You know how many they had to toss out before they got Dolly? Hundreds? Because, and some of the mutations were inviable. Some of them were viable, but would eventually be terminal. And some of them were just grotesque. And exactly the same scenario would be played out in the effort to clone human beings. Now, the Raelians say they've done it. If you have done this thing, wouldn't the first thing you'd want to do, beyond announcing it, I guess, if you're looking for publicity, is provide what is now medically kind of a routine proof? There are genetic tests comparing the mother and the clone that could be done. There are a whole battery of tests that could be done of various degrees of resolution. And what do you have? You have proof. The same kind of proof that gets people out of the death penalty. Same kind of proof that gets people convicted of the death penalty. A genetic match. We'll talk more about that with Gretchen Pasatino in the next hour. That is in a half hour. When we come back from this break, we will be continuing open lines. The Raelians, I don't know. If I'm Rael, the leader, I've already got a credibility problem, don't I? Because I claim to be able to channel alien thought. And I claim that I have a message from aliens. So I've got a credibility problem to begin with. Maybe claiming to have cloned a human being and then not providing the proof isn't a big thing. It doesn't really show up on his calendar. I don't know. But it is their goal. Their stated religious spiritual goal is to clone the human race into immortality. They say cloning is the pathway to immortality. So, we'll see. When we come back, I want to tell you about the New Jersey Appeals Court. They have said that overtly religious people can be, for that reason, barred from juries. This is a New Jersey appeals court. I'll tell you about the case that led to the decision. If you're overtly religious or pious, you can be barred from a jury depending on what the prosecutor or the defense attorney think about you. When they're going through the jury selection process and they want to take their exclusions, a legitimate reason, according to the New Jersey Court of Appeals, is that you appear to be or comport yourself as overtly religious. I'll tell you one thing, folks. When I went for jury selection in Illinois a couple of years back, I wore my clerical collar. And I'll tell you exactly why. I'll be honest with you. I didn't want to serve on jury duty. And I wasn't chosen. But I did sit there for 5 days waiting not to be chosen. Go figure. When we come back, open lines. Stay with us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.